Sunday, March 6th. Brilliant sunshine, but cold. The wind lay. Little vignettes of the day. Driving the winding roads to Blanco, to St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church, with Diana and Jesse and Marie and Vicky. Alas, once more, the Pope is getting incorporated into Protestant churches. A grave little altar boy, his boots sticking out from under his white vestments. Afterwards, coffee in the parish room of the very modern, attractive little church. The minister's wife, Mrs. Thayer, two other ladies telling me how much they enjoyed being hostesses. The boyhood home in Johnson City. And then to the Blanco Nursing Home to visit Mr. Percy Brigham, whom Lennon described to the press as the man who paid my way through college. It was a $75 loan. Pretty doubtful thing for an ambitious young boy. Then on to Johnson City. We drove around the boyhood home. The cars were fairly numerous. We didn't stop. And then down to the bank. The street trees are in, and they are delightful. But every last one is in. What will we do for a planting ceremony? The last of March. There are big redwood tubs in front of the bank, with green shrubs in them. And a just perfect live oak planted at the corner of the bank, and another in the little island in the middle of the drive-in. I hope visitors to Johnson City are as impressed as I was. Upstairs to the apartments for a survey and a low-calorie drink. I spent more hours with less interest on these apartments than on most things I do last fall. And then over to the Lewis and Logan ranches. The country is still in the grip of winter. There is no sprig of green. The creek is clear and swift. And the tank near the old stone house that we hope Roy White may buy is remarkably deep and blue and clear. But the land itself is drab and forbidding. Deer plentiful, but pitifully thin. The sheep have just been sheared and look gaunt and naked. I wonder how they managed in that 6-inch snow. Dale said everybody on the ranch stayed up until 10 o'clock trying to get the sheep and goats under shelter. There are dozens of little newborn lambs staggering around on uncertain legs, little balls of white. A.W. was with us by this time. We stopped at the Hartman house. They've bought new furniture of their own for their little living room and for their own bedroom. Lennon worked a format out with them, by which the furniture we put in the two new rooms will be at cost. We'll give them half of it, and the other half the boys can pay out for their summer work and their weekend work. Lennon had brought along 3 huge boxes of clothes from Neva West. You could start a store with it. He opened it up in front of the gate, called the whole family to gather around, and applauded each article as it emerged from the box, asking some member of the family to try it on. It was a show. Nobody enjoyed it more than he did. He asked them to decide on everything they could use, send the rest back to us, so we could give it to someone else. This is his private poverty project. And I have to say to cynics and scoffers, the two new rooms look well kept, the family looks cleaner and happier, and everybody seems willing to work hard for it and help pay for it. It seemed forever till we got back for lunch, and I was famished when we reached the house about 3:15, and John, Mathilda, and Arthur Krim, and Linda, who had slept late, and Jake, and Vicky, and Marie, for an enormous lunch. I ate, as Aunt Effie said, with a coming appetite. It was after 4 when we were up from the table. And then I had a long, happy talk with Linda by the fire in the big living room. She'd spent the morning bicycling with Mathilda, talking to Arthur. With stars in her eyes and excitement in her voice, George had called this morning from London or Paris. They had plans to get together for her birthday several times in the next few weeks. She's finally reached the point of not asking me, but telling me what she's going to do. One of her plans includes going to California to visit him. She talked to us about Texas today and tomorrow, the group she's joined to learn all about the university and make speeches on it, on or off the campus. A sort of indoctrination course, which I think must leave the person who talks thoroughly brainwashed, whatever it does to those who listen. She looked adorable in hip-hugger pants and Acapulco-type leisure clothes. I loved every moment with her. And then she left in time to be at the 6:30 service at All Saints in Austin. By now, Lyndon had gone out to get the last sun with A.W. and the Crims and Diana. And I, hungry for exercise, Walk down to the guest house. Love the new brass beds and the new wallpaper and the new rug in the Victorian room. Yearn for the hour or two to find the just right white spread and white curtains to complete the room. Then my conscience led me down toward Oriole's. I had promised to come see her before we left, but I couldn't spare the daylight. So I went up to the runway to walk along it, looking for what had happened to my bluebonnet seed. Alas, it was almost a total zero. I was thoroughly depressed. Apparently we had gotten none. But along the bank of the first tank, where we had spread them liberally, we had a meager stand. Then I drove down to the Cedar House and joined Lyndon and the party. Matilda and I walked over to Oriole's, gathered her up, and asked her to give us a tour through the house that was going to be hers. She was absolutely delighted, and it was a joy to see. It's one of the things I bless Lyndon for. She wanted to show us how she had very correctly moved the closets over to the west side because she liked the east sun. She liked to know when it was time to get up in the morning. She had a shelf for her clock. She had another shell for her redbirds, and her pleasure in it was a present to Lyndon and to me. Pretty soon, Lyndon and Diana and Arthur and A.W. and Jesse joined us. And I hope we gave Oriole enough to talk about until we come again. The fading light, we drove around the ranch and stopped at the new barn, which has a wonderful view of the Valley of the Pedernales, and very modern-looking aluminum stalls, and some sprayed-on insulation keeps a certain portion warm for the milk cows. And Lyndon had a long conference with Dale on everything that's going right and wrong on the ranch. We stopped by Dale's house to see the new baby, and then back at our house, James gave me the last discouraging, doleful news of the day. The sheep had gotten into the grounds of the old Sam Johnson farmhouse and eaten off every bit of foliage off of the scrubbery, as James says. And that includes my Mount Vernon magnolia. What I want on the range are at opposite poles from what a foreman wants. I want wildflowers and shrubbery. He wants sheep and grass. And so the eternal battle goes on. I have James as my ally. Lyndon is the chief spark plug. But Dale is the one in charge for about 300 days out of the year. So tact and good sense demand that I keep him as my partner. Diana was to leave, go to Southwest Texas State Teachers College, Lyndon's old alma mater, where she's recruiting for the Peace Corps. Two returned Peace Corpsmen, one from Guatemala, one from Bolivia, came over to get her. She brought them in to meet me and then Lyndon. Fine-looking young men they were. She left, and then at 9, so did we, in the Jetstar to Randolph Air Force Base. I was surprised not to sit down at Bergstrom, and then on the plane to Washington. It had not been a satisfying weekend, not really, for there was a full moon and good companionship with the Morrisons and the Krims, and brilliant sunshine. But it was cold, and our country was not alive. The magic of spring had not set in. On the way, we talked over them. Indian dinner list, the Democratic dinner in New York with Arthur. We had a light dinner, and then I lay down, hopefully to sleep, but not really, and so did Lyndon. A little after 1, we were at Andrews, and at 1:20, back at the White House. As we went up in the elevator, we would not see the Krims again, because they would leave a little past 7, though that most remarkable Matilda would be in our laboratory as a practicing scientist at 9. Lyndon leaned over and put one hand on each of them and said, "You are the sweetest couple I know." They have indeed given him understanding and help and gaiety and friendship. What bounty. But the most remarkable thing of the day had been the 10 minutes at the ranch while we were having that last drink when I phoned Lyndon's sister, Lucia, asking for either Lucia or Burge. I got Burge. We hadn't seen or heard from them in several months after a very pleasant closeness of a year or so. I value it and want to keep it up. There were a couple of abortive attempts at conversation. How are you? Pretty good. But I know everybody's had flu, and I sure hope you're all well now. We're doing all right. And then about the third go-round, he dropped the blockbuster. We've had an exciting time around here this weekend. Becky got married. At this point, I called Lyndon to the phone, and it became a three-way conversation. It turned out that Becky had gotten married sometime during the first week of February, but it only told him on Friday. This was Sunday. The news was painfully fresh. Lyndon asked if Lucia had gotten home from the hospital end quotes. Verge says, she's doing pretty good, but she blames me. She says it never would have happened if I hadn't talked to her into letting Becky go back to the university for the term in September. They had, it appeared, taken Becky out at midterm with the intention of keeping her at home for at least several weeks while a quite dreadful trial was going on in Austin. A university student was being tried for the murder of two young co-eds. One of them had been Becky's sorority sister. They wanted to remove her from the scene. I didn't quite get the sequence of events. Sometime during that period, Becky and young David Schulman, medical student in his senior year, had gone to Las Vegas for 2 days, had been married, had taken her several weeks to tell the family. Burge said, she's been trying, bless him. On Friday she had told them. Now, he said, they were back in Las Vegas, he thought, for the rest of that honeymoon, and then would take an apartment. The young man would finish pre-med in June, and then there would be the years ahead of medical school in Houston. We never got to talk to Lucia. Bird said she was at her neighbor's. In all my acquaintance, I never saw a young girl who led a more sheltered, supervised, loved life. But in spite of the dire predictions that some of us had made, that she was tied too much to parents' apron strings, she had been completely submissive, charming, normal, and successful for 22 years. A total triumph for their way of raising her. And then off she goes to Las Vegas to get married. The biggest gamble is parenthood. It had been a great day in the papers for beautification. Post had had a story on the landscaping students at the Arboretum, an architect's sketch of the downtown portion of F Street demonstration project, and a full-page layout of Brooke Astor creating parks without keep off the grass signs. I'm very grateful to Kay for providing that most precious ingredient to our project, word to the public that it's going on. And Lucy, who never lacks for understanding with the press, and had a wonderful article, Isabel Shelton's, about Lucy Pat seeking small apartment. Friends sure Lucy will adjust. Young couple shops undisturbed. Grades come first for Lucy until June. Just what I would like to see written.